Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls of all ages, welcome back to another episode of the Between the Tackles podcast. Loaded pod as usual. Joe, Burge, Manish. Dude, I am so jazzed, dude. This is my favorite time of the year. There's so much jockeying from position. This team's going from first to second in the conference all the way down to fifth and sixth in the conference. I don't know. It tickles me pink to have games mean this much at the end of the season. I don't know about you guys.
December football is clearly the best, and it's obviously awesome when your team is actually a part of it, which is the first time for you and I, Joe, since we started doing podcasting together, that we actually have that. Week 17's got a lot to live up to after what we witnessed last week, and I'm hoping it continues this week.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I really didn't need to know what tickles Joe Pink, but really looking forward to week 17.
I really hope that's like a blushing like metaphor, not like something awful that I'm going to get in the comments on Spotify again. Just like not. So, dude, there was a comment on Spotify when I said tire rod in a car reference, just shows how absolutely inept I, like, I should never be opening up the hood of the car unless it's to like put like windshield wiper fluid in. But anyways, let's get into our segments. We'll get into the, we'll get into the rankings this week. I'll kick it off with the Los Angeles Chargers at number five. Speaking of analogies and cars, this is the analogy. This is the car. They've got it. They've got all of the. They've got all the parts working. The turbo screwed on right. The tie rod screwed in tight. You know, they've got everything going. Herbert's only getting healthier. If they can find a way to keep him healthy, they're going to be extremely dangerous come playoff time. They just got to keep getting healthier and not have any other big blows to the injury. This is another one of those teams where I feel like they're loaded, but they just go down with injuries year after year. So I really hope they stay healthy. They're our number five team. They're creeping into the rankings just at the right time of the year. Burge, you mentioned it, obviously, in the first 2 minutes of the pod, as usual. We're Pats fans. There's a lot of talk in the Pats about not starting strong but finishing strong and peaking at the right time. And I think that metaphor and that strategy and that idea could be applied to the Chargers in 2025 going into 2026. So I'm high on the Chargers. I think they got good infrastructure, the coaching staff. They've got a loaded roster. The head of the snake, Justin Herbert, it's a dual threat. He's got a rocket arm. So, yeah, I'm pretty high on the Chargers. I think they've got some good pieces, and they've positioned themselves right. They even have an outside shot at winning that division.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy to see what they look like when they put it all together and get going. You know, you mentioned the injuries, getting guys like Amarion Hampton back. Clearly you're going to help this team. They obviously lost some serious positional players on the offensive line with their tackles going down earlier in the season. But you're right. They're peaking at the right time. They have an outside shot at the top of the division there, as well as even, I think they're even in play for the one seed at this point. If they can knock off the Broncos, they have a tough schedule. They got to play the Texans next week too. So that's going to be kind of a tough game for them. So we're going to find out what this team's made of, you know, coming down the stretch here.
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely love.
We've been high on the Chargers at multiple points in this season.
Well, we were high on them to start, and then they just absolutely, like, pardon my French, mom, close your ears, mom. They sucked ass to begin the season, dude. They were getting hurt. They couldn't put it together. They couldn't run the ball, which I feel like was a huge thing. It was kind of all on Justin Herbert, and I just think that, like, he's a great player. I just don't think he's in a spot in his career where doing it all himself is the most efficient way for the Chargers to win games. So I think them getting healthy and them getting some pieces back in the backfield and being able to run the ball is like a huge difference maker for them. So
I don't know. And this is a big game because we know what the Texans defense is offensively. You know, they might be suspect, but the Texans have stifled some great quarterbacks this year, and the Chargers frankly struggle against really good defenses. So I'm curious to see how this Chargers offensive line holds up against that ferocious Texans pass rush. I'm a big believer in Justin Herbert, as I've been for years, but this is going to be a really solid test. I have my doubts, but I do like what the Chargers have done in the last month.
Dude, the AFC West is so tough, dude. The Chiefs are 6-9, and they have a positive 40-point differential.
That's wild.
Yeah, that's pretty insane. They've, like, whatever, like, What? I'm not doing that math. I was going to do the math, but I'm going to send it to Barish to hit me with the fourth team.
Fourth team? Well, we're going to keep it in the AFC West, and the fourth team on our list is a team that's been creeping kind of closer to the top, but they drop a few spots this week. It's the Denver Broncos. Still a team holding the number one seed right now, controlling their own destiny with getting home field advantage in the bye week in the playoffs. But they're coming off a really tough loss where they were just, for argument's sake, blown out by the Jacksonville Jaguars at home, 34-24 this last week. And you kind of saw some cracks in that Denver defense that we've, you know, been so high on all season. The Jaguars basically destroyed the best red zone defense in the league this year, going 4-for-5 in the red zone. And that one time they didn't score a touchdown, they got points, they got a field goal out of it. So might have exposed the Broncos defense there. They have, like we just talked about with the Chargers, they meet the Chargers at home at the end of the season for the last week, which could have major, major seeding implications in the playoffs. They got a layup this week playing an undrafted rookie with the Kansas City Chiefs at Arrowhead. I fully expect them to win that game. But the number one seed in the AFC could be coming down to that week 18. And the Broncos have as good of a shot, obviously, as anybody. They control their own fate. It's a good position to be in, controlling your own destiny late in December. I have my doubts just based on what we saw with Jacksonville this past week. But if they clean it up, there's no reason to think that they're going to be the one seed come January time.
The Broncos, we're going to get to the Jaguars, but this Broncos team is almost it's an enigma to me. Like, it just feels like the defense is either dominant or there's some, like, the cracks in the armor for the Jaguars. There were massive plays. Number 11, Washington, had like a couple like massive receptions, mm-hmm. massive touchdown receptions. So I don't know, man. They were at home. The Jags went like turn on the head. Like they usually, you don't see these Florida teams go to places like Denver, New England, Pittsburgh, like all the, like Baltimore. You don't see them do that this time of year. And it shows, and that's makes, I don't know. I just can't tell that game. I don't know if it shakes me more on the Broncos or if it charges me up more on the number three team in our rankings. Manish, you want to get to the next team for us?
Yeah, it's the Jacksonville Jaguars. I mean, this is a team that we haven't spent that much time over the course of the season talking about them. But Liam Cohen has them positioned potentially for the number one seed. Bird, you had mentioned different paths that the Broncos can, you know, hold on to the number one seed. But if the Patriots and the Broncos lose one of their final two games and the Jaguars win their final two games, which you would anticipate because they're playing a Colts team that's, you know, going with Riley Leonard at quarterback in all likelihood, and they're going to finish up with the Tennessee Titans. So you're looking at a 13-4 Jacksonville Jaguars team, which could potentially end the season on an 8-game winning streak, and they probably will. The question becomes, will the Chargers beat Denver in week 18? Because that's really their toughest test in the remaining portion of the regular season. And will the Patriots somehow trip up with two AFC East opponents? I don't think they will, certainly not against the Jets this week, but the Dolphins, who aren't the Jets, but they clearly are out of it, will come to Foxborough in week 18. So if the Patriots don't take care of business and the Broncos don't take care of business, the Jacksonville Jaguars could sneak in and get the number one seed. And during this 6-game winning streak, they've had 3 blowout wins against 3 high-end teams. The Chargers, the Colts are not making the postseason, but at the time they were vying for a postseason berth. And then obviously, as you guys just mentioned, the Broncos last week. And Trevor Lawrence, to me, you know, I've said it a couple times now, you know, every time I'm out, he pulls me back in. You know, every time I think this is it, you know, he can't be resurrected. I don't care that he was the number one pick. He has performances like he's had these past couple weeks, 10 total touchdowns, no interceptions, more importantly. And you can, you know, maybe say, you know, a couple weeks ago against the Jets doesn't really count, but he was exceptional against the Broncos. And we see it every year, guys. The hottest team entering the playoffs mm-hmm. is the most dangerous team. Maybe the Jaguars don't get the number one seed, but it looks pretty clear now that they're going to be on an 8-game winning streak entering the postseason, and they could potentially be a dangerous team. Are they for real or not? I guess it depends on the matchups, but they're clearly deserving of a top 5 position in the power rankings at this point. And one might even say that we're, you know, underestimating them by putting them at 3.
Well, I definitely think they're definitely the biggest wild card, like highest floor, lowest ceiling team in the AFC. Like, I definitely think, like, if the Jaguars, you nailed it on the head. Like, remember how hot the Bengals were when they went into the playoffs in 2021 and they ended up beating Mahomes in Kansas City and going to the Super Bowl. Like, I could see some kind of run like that from the Jags because of how friggin' hot. I mean, look at how hot Flacco got in the 2012 playoffs, 12 touchdowns, no interceptions. So I feel like Manish, you took my thoughts right out of my head. I really think this Jags team is going to go as far as Trevor Lawrence is going to take them. The team got started earlier in the season with the running game and kind of getting their momentum, but ever since they turned it over to Trevor kind of carrying them, he hasn't looked back.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of when we were talking about the Broncos, Joe, you weren't sure if it was going to, you know, down you on the Broncos or charge you on the Jaguars. I kind of lean towards charging me on the Jaguars just based on that performance, you know, the couple weeks ago performance with Trevor Lawrence with six touchdowns against the lowly Jets. I mean, this team is rolling. They're hot. Liam Combs has this team playing exactly the way that they need to play to win these games. And, you know, they're going to be in a position where maybe not to rest their starters come these last couple of weeks, but like you said, with the schedule, they may not have to, you know, they could have these guys out early in these games to kind of get that rest that you're talking about going into the playoffs while still getting them their reps. So it's going to be a fascinating watch. Like we said, we've talked almost at nauseam about how the AFC is truly wide open in terms of who is going to come out of the AFC come the Super Bowl time. And these teams like the Chargers, like the Jaguars playing this well late in December, it just adds fuel to that. The playoff matchups are going to be fascinating to watch.
Yeah, and I just feel like the Jags play with like a little bit of a swagger now with like Cohen as their head coach. Like, you see the post game stuff, you see the locker room stuff. Like, do you remember like the late 2010s? Like, is that the aughts? Is the 2010s the aughts, or is that the first part of the century? What's the second decade? 2010 to 2019.
The teens,
late in the teens, late in the 20 teens. Those remember those Jaguar teams, the Doug Marrone Jaguars,
yeah,
with the good defenses and Blake Bortles as the head, and Leonard Fournette and whatnot.
Jalen Ramsey,
yeah, like those really good defenses. Like, that's kind of, I don't know if it's like the same like type of team, the same roster construction, as we industry folks say. But like, I don't think it's the same guy. I don't think it's the same kind of like roster construction in that way, but I do think they have the same kind of attitude, the same kind of like underdog mentality, like kind of swagger, like play hard nosed football, young guys, and nobody believes in us. Kind of like, I don't know, chip on their shoulder football. And it shows, I don't know. Burge, I think we have this team in a new spot for the first time in a while. You want to tell me?
Yeah, the Rams have been dethroned on our rankings here. You could make arguments that they shouldn't be dethroned, but for our rankings, they are. They are a number two team. They're coming off a really, really wild finish on Thursday Night Football last week against the Seahawks, the divisional opponent up there in Seattle, where they lost by a point in overtime. They keep rolling. I mean, you know, like I said, there's a strong case to be made that this team shouldn't drop. But given who they played, it seemed appropriate this week. No one's going to be sleeping on the Rams. I mean, again, that division, the NFC West, absolutely loaded. You know, we saw the 49ers on Monday night this week, you know, really put on an offensive performance against Indianapolis. You have the Rams, the Seahawks also in that division, who are playing really good football right now. And then you have the Rams. I mean, come playoff time, pick any one of those three, and they could be right there at the end. The Rams, Matthew Stafford, continues to play at an MVP elite level, securing his place as the likely MVP winner this year. Playing out of his mind defensively, they're playing great. There's really not anything bad to say about the Los Angeles Rams.
I agree. There is nothing bad to say about the Rams. And, you know, truth be told, and we talked about this before we started the podcast, I would still have them first in our power rankings. I understand you really can't, you know, given the fact that they just lost to a team that now has 12 wins in Seattle. What I'm fascinated, you know, without going over every detail of that game, I'm fascinated by this generally speaking when it happens, because it doesn't happen often. But the fact that there was no Devontae Adams in that game, and Puka Nacua still had over 200 yards receiving, to me, is mind-boggling. I cannot fathom how a team knows that a quarterback is going to one specific player over and over and over, and in this case, 16 times, 12 catches, and they can't stop it. And it's not as if Puka Nacua has blazing speed and he's running by guys. You know, he's fairly slow. He's a strong guy, but there's a reason why he was a late-round pick. And you know that Stafford is going to go to him in every critical moment, but you can't stop it. I just could not understand watching that game how Puka Nacua was getting big catch after big catch for four quarters and in overtime. It didn't make any sense to me. And, you know, Mike McDonald's a defensive guy. So that to me is, you know, just a credit to the chemistry that Stafford and Nacua have together. But I still, when I see that happen, I just don't understand. You know, earlier in the season, you saw Joe Flacco going to Ja'Marr Chase a million times. And the, you know, the question from a fan's perspective is, why don't you let somebody else beat you? And, you know, obviously, you know, Seattle could not stop the Rams. And if not for that fluky 2-point conversion play, they probably wouldn't even go into overtime. But look, we got him at two. We probably should have him at two. I think the reality is, when the playoffs roll around and Devontae Adams is back in the fold, you know, the Rams are a better team than the team that we have at the number one spot right now.
Yeah, and no, I've been on the Rams all year. I think they're a good team. I can't agree with you more with it, dude. I was watching this game almost like astonished at some points, like watching like the like how many like crucial, like you said, like crucial catches like Nacua came up with. And the thing was, dude, is like he had the big long catch for 58 yards, and then dude, he still averaged like it was almost 20 yards, 19 yards of reception. Sorry, I was looking at 19 yards of reception on 12 catches, like. I don't know. You're once again, Patriots fans. I just remember it drilled in your head. Everybody around here talks about how Belichick will never let your best guy beat you. Don't let the best guy beat you. Make the second best guy beat you. And every time that like the Patriots got beat is when they got punched in the mouth and like overcame that. You know what I mean? But I don't think that was the case here at all. I have no idea why they weren't triple covering him. And I mean, dude, these other guys have two and three. Everybody else has two catches. Like, and this guy has 12 catches, and you can't figure out how to fucking stop him. I don't know. Manish, I think we let the cat out of the bag a little bit, but you want to get to number one?
Yeah, the number one is the team that just beat the Rams, Seattle Seahawks. They're at 12-3 on the season. They do control their fate. They control their fate for a number of different reasons. You know, the Niners also control their fate, but the Niners play the Seahawks, so it kind of tells you who wins that game is going to have a serious edge here. I'm not a big believer in Seattle. I know. I think early in the season, midway through the season, I thought they were underrated. Now we're getting to the point where it's hard to say that they're overrated because they are 12-3. But the reality is, if you look at this team, they don't turn the ball over on the defensive side very much. They're solid on defense. I mean, obviously the Rams carved them up, but generally speaking, they're solid on defense. They just don't force many turnovers. And Sam Darnold, you know, for as good as he's been this year, and he clearly has been turning this into a first place team, there are fair questions to ask about whether he can perform in the biggest moments. Now, this was a big game, but it was also week 16 of the season. If Seattle does beat Carolina in Carolina this week, and then does beat San Francisco in the regular season finale in San Francisco, they'll be the number one seed. And I would anticipate that they would beat Carolina. So the question becomes, in that big moment, final game of the regular season, San Francisco, Seattle, will Sam Darnold deliver, or will we see a repeat of last season in the regular season finale when he really had a forgettable game against the Lions and it cost them a bye? And I think it's a fair question. And honestly, I'm not sure there's a bigger believer in Sam Darnold out there than I am, because I've seen him from the moment that he came into the league and the ups and downs he had as a young player and then sitting and learning midway through his career and now kind of reviving himself in Minnesota and in Seattle. But I think it's a fair, valid criticism to make in the biggest moment. Can he deliver? And maybe he will, but that's a fair criticism to make. And that's why I'm looking so forward to week 18. I don't want to skip over Carolina, but I effectively am, because I do think that the Seattle Seahawks will take care of business against the Panthers, making that week 18 game against San Francisco a massive game and a case of deja vu for Darnold, who was in the exact same position for Minnesota last year when they played Detroit.
you know, going against the 49ers in that game, it's in San Francisco. And let's not forget that Sam Darnold was a member of the 49ers a few years back. So you have to think, you know, as good of a coach as Kyle Shanahan is, knows his tendencies, they're going to be prepared to play Sam Darnold when week 18 rolls around. I kind of echo where you are with it. I'm not a huge believer in the Seattle Seahawks. But to quote you from last week, I mean, 12-3 is 12-3. You can't really go away from that stance on it. They had a big matchup. They won it. And until they lose, I mean, you know, can't really knock them. And, you know, we're at that time of the year with these rankings where every week there's going to be shifts in these rankings. We're in the real, to quote Joe from last week, nut cutting time for these teams. And there's going to be a lot of shifts.
Yeah, dude, I just looked it up. I was sorry, I was silent there for a second because I wanted to look it up after you said the. Because you're right, they don't turn the ball over a bunch on defense, Manish. So I wanted. I read this article in 2011 when I was a junior in high school. It was very formative to my football mind. Now, every time this time of year, I always try to do the math on what's called the passer rating differential, which is your quarterback, your starting quarterback's passer rating, subtract the passer rating that your defense gives up. That delta. The delta in between, the number that you get out of that equation, is your passer rating differential. And that is a very good indicator of who goes far in the playoffs and who maybe even wins the Super Bowl. And God darn, do the Seahawks have a really good one, dude. They have a 20 differential. Sam Darnold has a 100 rating. Seahawks give up a 80 passer rating. I don't know. I don't believe in Sam Darnold. I don't think that it holds up in the playoffs on the offensive side of that equation. But like you guys said, they are 12-3. They're in the tough, toughest division in football after Mahomes went down in the AFC West. So I don't know. The Seahawks, it doesn't look great on paper, but then when you watch them, it looks unbelievable sometimes. But
just real quick, before we move it on, just some honorable mention teams that we're watching for next week when it comes to this.
Of course.
We got the New England Patriots, obviously. If you had Joe and I's take on this, they'd probably be sitting right in these rankings after the first signature win for Drake May last week, coming from behind in the fourth quarter late. We have the Chicago Bears sitting there as well, coming off their big win against Green Bay. Some people aren't necessarily impressed by the Bears, which the public isn't all too thrilled about. We got the Buffalo Bills, who, if it was up to me, wouldn't even be sitting on this list because I'm just a bona fide biased hater of the Buffalo Bills. And then we had the Texans there, but I'm going to make an audible at the last second on this, and I'm going to put the 49ers there. They really deserve to be there. They very well could be sitting in these rankings as early as next week. So those are our four teams right now for this week that are sitting in the honorable mention spot.
Yeah, and look, this team does not deserve to be in the honorable mention spot, but I think it's worth mentioning Pittsburgh Steelers for the 22nd consecutive season will finish with a non-losing record, which is now an all-time record in NFL history, surpassing the 1965 to 1985 Dallas Cowboys. Mike Tomlin, on a personal level, is now 19 consecutive seasons without a losing record. That second most all-time, tied with Bill Belichick, of course. And look, I think Aaron Rodgers in the playoffs is a cool story. I mean, maybe some people don't. I mean, he's a polarizing figure. But if the Steelers can take care of business this week on Sunday, they might not actually have to if the Ravens lose to the Packers on Saturday. The Steelers clinch a playoff spot. But even if the Ravens do win, if the Steelers beat Cleveland on Sunday, Aaron Rodgers is back in the playoffs. Who would have thought that, you know, after that two-year nightmare stint in New York with the Jets? I think it's a cool story. They're going to be shorthanded because of DK Metcalf's suspension. You know, we could have a separate podcast on DK Metcalf just to keep it really short. I thought it was immature, unprofessional to go over and, you know, physically contact a fan, regardless of what he may or may not have said. And it could prove costly. Ultimately, I don't think it will because I don't think the Ravens are going to win against the Packers on Saturday. So I think the Steelers are going to get in either way. But I just think that Aaron Rodgers, you know, coming off of the Achilles tear lost season in New York, and then last season, I thought in the second half of the year, he played pretty well for the Jets. And to now, you know, be in a place, a more stable organization, a winning organization, frankly, a competent organization. He has a chance on the doorstep now to make the postseason. I think that's a pretty cool story for this season.
Hey, real quick on the DK thing, two things. Forfeits $40 million. Come on, dude. And something close to that. And my second thing is like, sometimes you just like, don't put yourself in the situation. Like, just don't put yourself in the situation. Don't engage with the animals. Like, there's a reason why those guys are in the fan and stands and you're on the field. There's a reason why we're behind a mic. And like, once again, you're on the field. Like, just, I'm always, that's my only thing I say every time these interactions happen with any athlete, any sport. There's a reason why you're on the court and they're in the stands. If you can't take the heckling, you probably shouldn't be an NFL or a professional player. There's obviously lines that get crossed, and going over to the fan only makes the line, you like, the fans get closer to the line because you're going to hear more of what they say. Like, I just don't think, like, just don't put yourself in this situation. Not saying the guy did anything wrong, right? Any, like, who's wrong or right? I'm not saying that. I'm just like, do not put yourself in this situation. There's a reason that guy spent $500 to be that close to you. He wants that rise out of you. That's why people sit that close. They want that interaction. Don't give it to him.
Yeah, well, the professional athlete has everything to lose there. I mean, exactly. What's a fan have to lose, really? Like, what's he gonna do? Not be allowed to go to a game anymore?
A fucking dump, like, truck. Like that dude's exactly. Like a sanitation worker, and he's like,
you're taught that in
I'm
any
just
sport.
Kidding. Sorry, if that guy's listening, dude, just I'm sorry.
In any,
get back in your truck.
Sport, any level of sport, you're taught to not engage with people in the stands, no matter what level you play, as a kid, as a high school athlete, as a college athlete, whatever, you're taught that. So yeah, he put himself in a pretty bad situation there. $40 million is a tough one to swallow there.
Yeah, I'd be freaking, dude. I'd be suing the hell out of that guy. He said something worse than anything, dude.
Yeah, he's obviously this is back. You know, this is a little bit different, but there's some link to it. I think the worst kept secret in NFL circles is that you can get a rise out of DK Metcalf if you're a player, if you're an opposing player. And if you look at his career, there have been a lot of quarterbacks who have used their words to prompt penalties from DK Metcalf. So getting under his skin with words doesn't seem to be that difficult of a chore for anybody. And I think that's been documented on the field. Unfortunately, you know, it's spilled off the field this time.
That dude's an absolute moose. There's like one guy I'm not talking shit to. It's probably moose, dude. Bears, spreadsheet, go.
Picks. All right. Current standings. Manish, 27-1. Joe, 22-25-1. And myself, 26-22.
Wow.
Coming down the stretch here. You guys got to make up some ground here.
I need a three, dude. If I sneak a 3-0 week in here, dude.
I mean, I just did last week, so you know.
here we go, dude. We might have to switch up how we do the picks.
Crisco, Crisco, all over here for myself over here.
No, dude, no. Crisco shortage over Bearish household. No.
All right, so my first pick of the week, Manish. We just kind of talked about the team, and it's a team that DK Metcalf plays for. I'm taking the Pittsburgh Steelers -3. They're playing in Cleveland. I don't know. I've been a real detractor of the Pittsburgh Steelers this season, but they're playing really good football at the right time. Like we just talked about, peaking in December. They're coming in on a 3-game win streak. Wasn't exactly the easiest stretch for them this season either. It started with the Ravens beating them to kind of assert themselves in the division. They had a pretty much of a layup against the Dolphins, and then a really big win against a team also fighting for playoff lives in Detroit on the road last week. And, you know, they're playing really good football. I agree with Manish, despite my personal opinions about Aaron Rodgers and how I feel about him as a player. He makes the storylines even better for an already just jam-packed storylines for the AFC playoffs this year. I like them to go Cleveland. They're -3. I like them to kind of take care of their own business and lock up their division there. So give me Pittsburgh -3. Next pick is going to be the San Francisco 49ers. They are hosting the Chicago Bears. I'm kind of a bigger guy on the Bears than a lot of people here on the podcast, but the 49ers are just a better team. They're just a better team. I kind of agree with what Manish had kind of said about the 49ers this week. Also fighting for their lives in the division, really fighting for the one seed still. So they got plenty to play for. They're coming off a massive victory against the Colts, where the offense was just all over the place. Just Brock Purdy, I think, had 5 touchdowns. George Kittle got going, even though he got kind of dinged up in this game. I don't know if he's going to be able to go on Sunday night for this one. But the Bears win against Green Bay last week, you know, despite my feelings about the team, ultimately I felt was fluky. I thought that was a game they towards the end of it that they had no business winning. But a couple of things went their way and it ended up working out for Chicago. I think San Francisco's a better team. And I think that getting, you know, laying 3 points at home for a team kind of going, you know, a little bit halfway across the country to get out there in the primetime spot again. Give me Kyle Shanahan in that 49ers team there. And for my massive lock, I'm taking Manish's team. I'm taking the Philadelphia Eagles to go on the road to Orchard Park to play the Buffalo Bills. And again, noted Bills biased hater over here. Obviously, I'm going to pick against them. I'm making them my lock this week. The Bills, in my opinion, last week weren't all that impressive. They were playing the lowly Cleveland Browns. And I say this more so on the defensive side because James Cook had an absolute field day against the Browns. Really the main reason that offense was able to score points in this one. I don't even think Josh Allen had a touchdown. I think he was held on under 150 yards passing, or it was under 200 yards passing in this game against the Browns. But James Cook is an absolute monster. But I like the Eagles to kind of match up against with that. And you know, the Cleveland Browns, before, you know, Quinshon Judkins got hurt, was having success running the ball, a little bit of success running the ball against this Buffalo defense. It took some timely sacks of Shedeur Sanders at the end of the game to really prevent Cleveland from driving to tie it late. I like the Eagles to come out and basically run circles. Saquon Barkley to just tear up Buffalo on the road. Kind of means a little bit more for Buffalo to win this game than the Eagles. I don't think the Eagles really, based on the standings, have a real shot at improving much in terms of their seeding in the playoffs. But the Bills obviously do. I just wasn't, and this is me trying to be as unbiased as I can be when watching that game. Outside of James Cook against the Browns, I was not impressed by Buffalo. They're defensively, I didn't expect them to give up that many points to Shedeur Sanders in that offense. And I kind of expected the Bills to blow them out. And that didn't happen. It had me glued to my seat. But I will be glued to my seat 4:25 on Sunday afternoon to watch this one because I am a big fan of Manish's Eagles in this one. So Philadelphia plus 1.5 is my lock of the week. Manish, I'll just throw it right to you. Go ahead.
All right, well, let me just hop on where you left off, and I'm going to take the other side. I'm going to take the
Shocking.
Buffalo Bills. Yeah, giving a point and a half. The game was in Philadelphia. I would take Philly, but the game's up in Orchard Park. Here's the thing. This is how I'm torn here. One, and you alluded to this a minute ago, Burge, the Eagles don't have that much to play for. There is a path for them to be the 2 seed. They're currently the 3 seed. I don't know how much motivation that is for them. But staring them right in the face is one of the worst run defenses I have seen in a very long time. You had mentioned Quinshon Judkins having some success before he was hurt last week against Buffalo. Well, Cleveland ran for 160 yards, 5.2 yards per carry against Buffalo. And you know the formula that Nick Sirianni and Kevin Petullo are going to employ, which is give it to Saquon Barkley, which, you know, on paper sounds great, but you know, Saquon has struggled this year for a number of different reasons. Their offensive line has been a shell of its former, you know, elite self. Would it matter against such a terrible run defense? You know, only time will tell. But I think you'll see a heavy dose of Saquon Barkley. But I'm also torn because the lopsided nature of the quarterback play in this game is so massive. You've got AFC Pro Bowl starter Josh Allen, by the way, on one side, and you've got Jalen Hurts on the other side. You know, if you're a realist, which I have repeatedly espoused to be, you would say that these last two games that the Eagles have won have been non-competitive and largely inconsequential because of the nature of their opponent. They shut out the Raiders, who stink. They beat the Commanders, who stink. The last time the Eagles faced a team worth anything was the Los Angeles Chargers. And I'm not sure if you guys remember, but Jalen Hurts had 5 turnovers in that game and they looked lost offensively. So I'm a little torn because I hate betting on a team that's so porous against the run, but the quarterback disparity is so huge that I'm going to side with Josh Allen at home against Jalen Hurts. I think it'll be a fun game, but at the end of the day, as I've said on several different occasions over the last few months, I will take my chances in a tight game with Josh Allen on my side.
Hold on 1 second. Would you have picked Buffalo minus 1.5 if I had not taken the Eagles first?
Yeah, I would have. I actually debated making this my lock of the week, except it will not be my lock of the week because I'll get to that in a second because I do want to have the middle game here. And I'm taking the Texans as a 2-point underdogs against the Chargers. And I hate doing this, but the rules that we have, instituted are you got to take an underdog. So I'm taking an underdog that has a good record in the Texans, a team, frankly, on paper that looks great when you look at the win-loss column. They've won 7 in a row. But anybody who watched the game last week against the Raiders comes away with one undeniable fact, and that is C.J. Stroud just cannot be relied on. He cannot be relied on. I know he had a few games with some success, but he's just too erratic. Every time he drops back to pass, I get a sense that something bad is going to happen for the Texans. He too often forgets that Nico Collins is a superstar at his disposal, and Collins kind of disappears for large stretches in games. The running game is largely non-existent. Woody Marks didn't play last week. Nick Chubb got dusted off, had a handful of carries. And Juwan Jordan, who I frankly hadn't heard of prior to 2 weeks ago, wasn't particularly impressive against the Raiders. So, I think against a good team, it's going to be tough to score points. But as I said earlier, I think it'll be tough sledding for Justin Herbert as well because of how good the Texans' offense or defense is. So I don't really like taking the Texans, but if you're going to get points for a 10-5 team, given these circumstances, I'm going to begrudgingly go with Houston and the plus 2. But I'm not a believer. I want to make this abundantly clear. I am not a believer in C.J. Stroud. I've watched so many Texans games over the course of the last year and a half, and every time he drops back to pass and lets it go, you get this impending doom that something bad's going to happen.
The pucker factor.
Yeah. And now, look, my lock of the week. Like as I said earlier, I thought about the Bills, but I got to go with your New England Patriots. I mean, it's a heavy number, to drop on the road, 13.5 points, nearly 2 touchdowns on the road. But thankfully, they're not really playing an NFL opponent. They're playing the New York Jets, who have 12 losses by an average margin of defeat of 13 points. And if you look at the last month and a half, it's almost laughable. I had to write this down because I actually could not believe how inept they have been in the last 5 weeks. Losses by 13, 13, 24, 28, and most recently, a 23-point loss to the inept New Orleans Saints. This is a horrible team. It's even a worse defense. They've packed it in. There's a couple games left. And look, I applaud Aaron Glenn for trying to piece this together after they strategically made trades to get rid of their 2 defensive players, Quinnen Williams and Sauce Gardner, for future draft capital. This defense really has never stood a chance. It's one of the worst secondaries I've ever seen, and I've covered football.
Fired their DC. Like,
right. They fired that, Steve Wilks. And remarkably, they have set a new NFL record to start a season with 15 consecutive games without an interception. So if you want a prop bet, I don't even care what the odds are. I bet $100 that Drake May is not going to throw an interception. I'm sure you're not getting great odds. That's not going to happen. This is one of the more remarkable factoids of the 2025 NFL season, that a team through 15 games has not gotten an interception. It's inconceivable. I really don't even understand how you can't luck into an interception over the course of 3+ months. So
even a tipped ball, like
exactly a tipped ball, anything. Yeah.
A sack, this game, throwing out of a sack, a drop.
Absolutely. This game will be a laugher before you can settle in. Make sure if you want to watch this game, make sure you get home before 1:45. I'm assuming this is a 1 o'clock game. Yeah, make sure you don't miss the first 30 to 45 minutes, because those are probably going to be the only, you know, competitive moments of this game. This is going to be a train wreck for the New York Jets, a complete massive one-sided snooze fest. The Patriots are going to win. Drake May probably is not going to play the last, 8 minutes, the last half of the fourth quarter. This is going to be a laugher in every sense of the word.
Even when he picks the Patriots, he can't say anything nice. He's got to just bash on the opponent.
This is not an NFL caliber. Well, look, we're talking about a playoff caliber team versus a team that really should not be a part of the league. So obviously I'm going to, you know, pick the team that, you know, is of high quality, like the New England Patriots. I mean, you guys have waxed poetic enough about the Patriots. I don't really need to say anything more other than they are far superior to the New York Jets. And I don't really think there's going to be a competitive moment outside of the first quarter, to be honest with you.
Well, so I talked about that stat that I've like talked about since I was like 17 years old, the passer rating differential stat. Do you want to know what the Jets passer rating differential this year is? Negative 29.
Yeah.
Negative 29. That they've let up a passer rating of 104. And they've had an average passer rating of just over 75. So, yeah, not great. Really not great. But, yeah, go ahead, Manish. Sorry. Was that your lock or no?
Yeah.
That's my lock of the week, yeah. I mean, and the other thing is, you know, I talked about prop bets, Drake May not throwing interception. You're probably going to get much better odds. So you should probably bet that Brady Cook will throw an interception. You know, but by all accounts, he's a great kid, you know, rookie. Nice guy. There's a great story about his parents showing up for his first game a couple weeks ago, but he's not a starting caliber quarterback in the National Football League, and they really have no chance with that defense and that quarterback.
I did the math wrong. It's negative. It's a 24-point differential, but we're not keeping score. Yeah, dude, the Jets absolutely stink, dude. Me and Shy were talking about how to rebuild it today. Obviously, we were on different wavelengths. I'm like, dude, I think it's time to cashola in on those picks. Drafting the top of the draft quarterback for the Jets just doesn't work. So maybe we'll cash in for somebody who's already done it. But yeah, who knows, dude? I think we've talked about it a million times. I don't think they do anything. I don't think the Jets go anywhere until the tip top of that pyramid changes. But yeah, I'm going to get to my picks. You guys fancy some Joe picks?
Let's go. Too bad.
I'm coming anyway.
Absolutely.
I got the Rams -8 at the Falcons. I think the Rams are coming off an emotional loss, emotional divisional loss to the Seahawks. They're going to the Falcons, who have basically nothing to play for. They're playing 90-year-old quarterbacks and backups. They looked frisky. I think it's all over. I think the Rams go in there reinvigorated with something to play for, trying to keep pace at the top of the at the NFC and in their division. If the Rams want to host a playoff game, they have to win this game. Doesn't matter if it's the Falcons, St. Mary's School for the Blind, or the 2004 Patriots. It doesn't matter. They have to win this game. And I get the Rams -8. I think they can cover that pretty easily. And then, you know what, dude, you know what we're going to do for this next pick? Manish, you said we're cornered into taking an underdog, and you know what we're going to do? I'm backed into a corner, and the only thing you can do when you're backed into the corner is to keep pounding. You keep pounding, and I'm taking the the Carolina Panthers +7 versus the Seahawks. The Seahawks going west to east. This game is going to be played at 10 a.m. PST. Pacific Standard, but 10 a.m. PST. So the Seahawks are going to be sleepy. The Panthers are going to come out early, punch them in the mouth, be able to get on the ground, make the game grind to a screeching halt, and the Seahawks are going to have to come back and win this game in a knockdown drag-out fight, kind of how the Colts game went. Not like a comeback, not like they came back big in the Colts game, but I think the Panthers are going to come out, punch the Seahawks in the mouth, and it's going to be a tight game. I don't expect the Panthers to win this game, but I love me a home dog, dude. I love me a home dog, and we're going to keep pounding. So give me the Panthers +7 versus Seahawks at home. And then for my lock of the week, my mortal lock, honestly, mortal lock of the century, to be honest. This is classic teams. This is classic, like, immovable, unstoppable force means immovable object. Well, you know what I'm going? I'm going with the unstoppable force in the Chargers offense versus the immovable object in the Texans defense. Give me the Chargers -2 at home versus the Texans. The Texans are going to be playing on the road. The Chargers are rolling right now. Just like you, dude, I just think CJ Stroud just doesn't have it this year. I think the advantage that the Chargers have on offense in this game is going to be able to, and maybe some of that defense is negated by not playing in front of the home crowd with the crowd noise. I think the Chargers might be able to run the ball a little bit in the game. And I think being able to run the ball, being multiple, having the quarterback being a dual threat and being on the road are kind of all things that work against elite defenses like the Texans, and especially elite pass rushes like they have this year with all the elite pass rushes they have with all the guys on the defensive line. So I like the Chargers this week, -2 at home versus the Texans. That's going to be my lock. A lot to play for there for both teams, but I think the Chargers get it done to cover 2. Anybody Love else it. Have any other zingers we got, boys? Oh, wait, Manish. We're going to hit it. We're going to hit it with the inaugural segment of Manish's Minute.
week 17, we're debuting it. I absolutely love it.
We're a forever work in progress, dude.
Look, if you're in your fantasy football finals in redraft, you're probably not picking anybody up of consequence. So I don't really want to waste your time for redraft suggestions. My suggestions are more geared toward guillotine leagues. I'm in a guillotine league for the first time. 18 teams. If you're not familiar with the process, 18 teams, low score each week gets eliminated. That team's roster becomes free agents, and then you can bid on those players. And it's just a really entertaining and fun and, you know, high intensity type of fantasy football. So, you know, we're down to two teams now. Fortunately, I'm one of the two teams, but there are a lot of good players that are free agents that obviously would not be available in a redraft league. So my suggestions, if you are in the finals in your guillotine league, a couple sneaky good ones are on the team that I have as my lock of the week, and that's the New England Patriots. Stephon Diggs, you know, coming off a monster game against the Ravens. He's going to have a field day against the New York Jets secondary, which is invisible. You know, just ask Chris Olave, who just lit them up, or really any receiver that they played over the last 3 months. So I think that, you know, Diggs can have a monster game. If you need a tight end, Hunter Henry, you know, he scored the other night against the Ravens. I think he's another guy who will find a lot of open spaces, and Drake May will probably hit him over and over against the New York Jets. Just another guy to keep an eye on. My top pick, however, would be Travis Etienne. Or is it Trevor Etienne? Which is a good – I get the brothers mixed up.
Travis is Jacksonville.
Travis is Jacksonville, right. Well, Travis in Carolina, keep pounding. I would say Travis Henry. Oh, man, I'm on a roll. Manish's Minute's off to a great start. Travis Etienne against the Indianapolis Colts team, which we have already – discussed, has packed it in. They'll have Riley Leonard. They're a non-factor. Anybody who watched the Niners game the other night, you know, saw Brock Purdy throw all over the place to Christian McCaffrey. You saw Christian McCaffrey carve him up on the ground. I think you'll see a huge game for ETN. Jaguars, as we said earlier, still in play for the number one seed. Colts have gone fishing. So I think this could be a monster game for Travis Etienne. And he, in all likelihood, is available if you're in guillotine in the final matchup. So those are the guys I think would be sneaky ads if you're looking to, you know, maybe, you know, sneak and weasel in a championship. Just, you know, editor's note here, I'm, without getting into too many details, I'm playing against a juggernaut team. I have really no chance of winning. So I'm probably going to take some risks and, you know, add guys like ETN and Diggs.
Dude, I feel like those picks are also good for daily fantasy too. If you guys do like the DraftKings and FanDuel, yeah, like DFS stuff, like those leagues, those picks will be good. But so for reference for everybody else who's my age, Travis Henry, I knew their name rang a bell, dude. Former Buffalo, wow, Pro Bowl running back who retired, yeah, who retired in 2007.
Yeah, yeah. Also,
you actually had to look that one up.
Yeah, yeah. If you're unfamiliar, he's also a big family man. I'll just leave it at that.
Oh, yeah.
You got like hella kids? Anyway, I'll look that. I'll do that Google on my own time because I guarantee I'll get stuck in a wormhole. But that's it for the Thursday episode. That's going to drop on Wednesday. Happy holidays to everybody. Happy Hanukkah.
Happy holidays.
Happy Hanukkah. Happy Kwanzaa. Merry Christmas. All of it. Merry Festivus. Friggin' Merry New Year. All of that stuff. Everybody, have a happy holiday. We love you all. Goodbye.